you know, Walk on the Wild Side. Okay. I keep pretending what I know the name of that that song.
Well, I think I need to talk to somebody because that's not our intro music. Anyway, you're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 FM on the airwaves, and WCOMFM.org on the World Wide Web, supporting freedom of expression, the essence of a free society. Welcome to Carolina Bookbeat. This is a show devoted to views, reviews, and interviews about the written word in all its many creator forms. Your hosts are Paul Nage and Audrey Layden. That's me, here to start your week off with some good talk about words and all the ways we put them together. To find out more about what's coming up and to access show podcasts, check out our blog at carolinabookbeat.com for news and to give us your comments and suggestions. You can also contact us by emailing producers at carolinabookbeat.com. And as I usually say on Monday mornings, please do email us if you've gotten something written that you'd like to talk about, or if you've got suggestions for people you think we should have on the show. Just send us an email, producers at carolinabookbeat.com.
Yep, that's how we find a lot of the people that show up on this show, is from suggestions from you. So
keep
the suggestions coming. And by the way, we are dedicated to take the written word and turn it into some version of the spoken word for at least the hour that you're with
us. And while you're at it, during this, particularly this cold weather, which is a great time for gathering of books and staying home and reading, you can check out what's going on at the Carrboro Branch Library. Give them a call at 919-969-3006. The library is located within the McDougall Middle School at 900 Old Fayetteville Road in Chapel Hill. They're open Monday through Thursday from 3:30 to 8, Saturday from 10 to 2, and Sunday from 1 to 5. They're closed on Fridays.
And if you happen to be listening to us through the World Wide Web, you can go to your local library, too.
Always support your local libraries and support your independent bookstores wherever you are. Very happily this morning, we have a guest with us, Roy Schmidt, author of Living the Harbor Island Dream. Thanks for coming in, Roy.
Well, thank you.
This is a fantastic story of adventure. And as I mentioned a little bit,
I would think that most islands have harbors, so maybe you should tell people where Harbor Island is.
Yes.
Harbor Island is a very small island off the northern tip of Eleuthera, which is a large island in the Bahamas. It's about 120 miles long. But just 2.5 miles across the harbor is this little island, 3.5 miles long and mm-hmm. half a mile wide.
Yeah. It could have been visited by pirates before you got there.
Oh, definitely. That's a part of the history. Oh,
yeah.
Wreckers and pirates. And
only a half mile wide.
That's right.
That didn't register with me before.
Not a desolate island by any means. It had an indigenous population of about 1,200 people.
Uh-huh.
And five small inns and resorts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's super neat. When I was thinking of an island, of course, as you grew up on Long Island,
yes.
I grew up on Long Island.
Well, that's a bigger island.
And that's a big island, which is almost a peninsula, too.
There is a Long Island in the Bahamas,
uh-huh.
too. Yeah, yeah.
And I realized this was, you know, was not Long Island, but I didn't realize it was only a half mile wide, which is not very wide.
Yeah, well, it's
you can run across the island.
Know, almost look at it. Consider it a large Outer Banks island.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's... one thing is this book is almost, as I mentioned to Roy before we got on the air, it's almost about a story about love at first sight.
That's right.
In how he got to see the island. But let's talk a little bit about, well, why don't we just start off with that? The
All
first
right.
time you saw the island.
Well, I'll get to that, but a synopsis of the book. In 1960s, Herman Wolk wrote a novel called Don't Stop the Carnival. It was a hilarious novel, and it's about a New York executive who visits a little Caribbean island and suddenly decides he hates the job he has in New York City and he wants to make a change, so he buys this funky resort and all the crazy things that happen. Well, it's exactly my story, except mine's not Mine's nonfiction. Mine's a true story.
That question is, did you read that book then?
That no.
Was it sitting around as a template in the back of your head?
If I had, I would never have done it. But it is, it's the Bible of among Caribbean and
among people
Island
who run around
to
buying or working on islands.
Yes, yes.
Well, you grew up on Long Island.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You more or less married fairly young.
Yeah, right out of college.
Right.
Yeah, that was the thing to do then.
Right. And it's, you know, like 21 or 22, which is very young for
21,
a male
yeah.
to marry.
Yeah.
Anyway, by the time you were in your mid, and you went into your father's business, because you really, even though having been attracted to nautical life and island ideas since an early age.
I had this fantasy from childhood of being self-sufficient on a small island somewhere.
Right, right.
Yeah. It was always a part of things, and I loved boating and all that sort of thing. But
and then in mid-30s, you more or less would say, I mean, I hate to call it midlife crisis because it's such a cliche, but realizing your life wasn't exactly what you wanted.
That was the early midlife crisis.
Early midlife, early life crisis, yes. Yeah. I was restless. I knew I had a vague feeling that there had to be something else, that this business I was in, I really didn't like it that much.
It was plumbing, right?
Yeah, and I thought, well, maybe I could have a charter boat down in the Caribbean or something like that. That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Always heard of the Caribbean. And I didn't have anything definite in mind, but I had an invitation from friends to come and spend a weekend with them, a long weekend on Harbor Island. Well, I'd never heard of it, but it was in the Bahamas, and it didn't really interest me that much, but I figured, well, that's sort of a social obligation. I'll go and do it. And you land on an airport on North Eleuthera, and you take a taxi, and it's a short taxi ride up a hill and then down the hill. But as soon as I reached the ridge of the hill and looked across at this island, it just grabbed me. It just, wow. And
because the beginning, where you landed, was very flat.
Flat and very unappealing. And here
right.
was this hilly island with all these beautiful pastel waterfront cottages and I thought, wow, and it just kept building and building. Everything that happened just kept building up that,
So you had to take a boat there, right?
You take a ferry across,
yeah.
And as the ferry got closer, my emotions got higher and higher, and then second day I was there, I met a lovely, beautiful English girl who was on vacation, and the third day I was there, I bought an old house on 10 acres of land on the water. And on the seventh day, I proposed to her, and on the eighth day, I rested.
And this was after having a divorce.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
So
with the plumbing, went the first wife, huh?
Yes, yes.
So that was it was precipitous in a way because you didn't expect it then and there. You were headed in your mind to the Caribbean.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is, you know, what came into my mind was sometime across a crowded room, you'll see, you know,
yes.
what grabs you, and you just went for it.
It just all fell into place, mm-hmm. and I just acted on impulse. And the interesting thing is I said, well, I can't do anything in the heating business here in the Bahamas. So maybe I'll make a resort. I had no idea about a hospitality business, but that's why I bought this place. And we opened with three rooms and just built it up gradually. But over the years, so many of my guests would say, well, how did you happen to get here? And then I'd tell them the story, and the reaction would always be, you know, I want to do something like that. I really don't like what I'm doing. I don't like my job. And I figure I might be ready in about 5 years. And I said, well, if you think about it, you won't do it. If
well,
I'd thought about this, I wouldn't have done it.
You know, throughout the book, it seems to be, I almost want to ask what your astrological sign is, because
Aries.
Aries, okay.
Well, that explains it right there. Aries always does first, thinks later.
The Ram, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, because you so frequently and even more recently in your life since you're back here on the mainland, you just go and do things. You get the idea, the opportunity is there, and you don't hesitate for fear, or you don't hesitate from fear to start with, which I think is what keeps a lot of people from following through on their dreams.
It does.
They
it
think
does.
Of all yeah. the things that they might lose yeah. in following this, or that they'd have to give up, and they just don't do it then.
And I love a quotation from Herman Wouk's book. Of course, I'm sure everybody knows, but Caine Mutiny, Marjorie Morningstar, Winds of War, that Herman Wouk.
Mm-hmm.
But his character who went down to this island, and when he had to go back to New York to close up, so they threw a big going-away party among his business friends and everything. And this is from his book. He said, "They all said that we were doing the right thing. They were at an age where their lives were defined, their hopes circumscribed. To them, the Papermans, that's the characters, had escaped death row into green April fields."
Uh-huh. And in order to escape, you have to be willing to take the risk to break loose.
Yes, but you know, characteristically, I was not that kind of a kid growing up. I was very hesitant and had to think about things and worry and then all the fears and, well, can I do this, can I do that?
Right.
And but for some reason, this was a complete flip-flop.
Well, it reached back into the child that you had in you that wanted to be on an island.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, and it just tapped into that.
And I wanted to create my own thing.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to note also that the person who did the cover art.
Yes.
Jerry Carl's cover art, which is really a beautiful painting, looks like, or watercolor.
Yes.
Is a fellow dreamer, I'm reading this from the introduction and dedication of the book, is a fellow dreamer who left the New York advertising business after 35 years when he visited Nantucket and impulsively bought an old house to create a wonderful bed and breakfast establishment, the Chestnut House. And then you have a quote, as Yogi Berra once said, a deja vu all over again.
Yes.
So you know other people who will do or have done the same thing.
And the interesting thing, he had been a guest at my place.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get to know him real well. It was right near the end, except he did wonderful artwork and mm-hmm. things like that. And I was on Nantucket and on a day visit and just looking for a place I might like to stay. And I walked into this Chestnut House. And in a conversation with this fellow, I said, well, I used to be an innkeeper. And he said, where? And I said, Harbor Island. And he looked at me and said, Roy Schmidt.
See? You can't get away.
And in trying to come up with what kind of a photograph to put on the cover and everything, my daughter, who's an artist, too, kept saying, Dad, that painting that Jerry Carl did, that's got to be on your cover. Because mm-hmm. it's, as opposed to a photograph, it's got a dreamy quality because it's
right.
a watercolor.
Right.
And so that's how that came about. But
so one of the things in here you have is there were lots of experiences, lots of events, lots of dramatic what really hit me
so
is dramatic.
So yours was sort of a bohemian Faulty Towers, is that what you're saying? Is that what you expect?
That's a good description, yes, yes. We had plenty of faults over
well,
the years.
You also talk about the sailing that you did while you were down there. And
yes.
As I mentioned earlier in conversation, that I'm not that comfortable out on the water, you know, big wide water.
Yeah.
I like sitting on the beach or waiting. And your sailing
you
adventures.
Like your water defined.
Yes, exactly. Just, you know, at a distance, sort of. But your sailing adventures there, I mean, and I congratulated you earlier on being here today. Though it sound like very, very
when I look back on
dangerous
that,
episodes.
Yes, the whole thing was, I had this huge 48-foot catamaran, and it was over in St. Augustine, and I had sailed it down from Patchogue, Long Island,
mm-hmm.
and had laying it up there for repairs. And this Bahamian fellow, Captain Henry Sawyer, when he heard I had been a sailor, he came up to talk to me. And he just talked and talked. And he said, don't go get your boat until I tell you. I taps my barometer every morning, and I'll tell you when it's safe to go.
Yes.
So he came up a couple of weeks later, or I think a month later or two, and said, you can go get your boat now. Well, then the problem was, who was going to help me sail it over? And first of all, they had to have a visa. I had to find somebody who had a visa and some sailing experience. Well, they said this fellow Peter Saunders did. So I signed Peter on, and we went over to pick up the boat. And that night, Hurricane Gladys came right through the boatyard where we were.
So much for his ability.
So much for his barometer, right?
Yeah, so much for Captain Sawyer's barometer. So we set out, and just the two of us after the hurricane, and set out, and I wanted to go make a cup of coffee or something. I told Peter to take the helm and hold the course. Told him what the course was, told him to hold it. And I was down there, and I heard the sails flapping, and I knew he'd changed direction or something. I came up, Peter, I said, you're way off course. He said, well, boss, I can't see the compass from here. I ain't got my glasses. This was the beginning of a cruise across the open waters. And then we had a big storm, and it just another unbelievable situation where finally night fell and we'd been taking such a beating, and he couldn't relieve me on the helm.
You had to stay with it.
Stay with it, and it was a standing up situation and getting soaked and drenched, and you just...
He had to tie himself to the wheel.
How many hours was that?
You got to, you get desperate. You want to get on shore. And I figured out where I thought we were and where a nearby island was that had a cove in it. And, of course, Bahamians will never go anywhere in the dark because they can't see the reefs. The water's so clear that they can see, but they will not go in the dark. And I told him we were going to go in that, he said, in the dark. And I said, yes. And he put on a life jacket. And I just timed it by dead reckoning. I could barely see this. I saw where the tip of this island was, and I figured where the inlet was. And I just turned at that point because I was desperate. How to stop.
Right.
And we went right in this nice entrance and anchored, and I broke out some rum, and Peter said, I ain't never been so scared in my life, but when you asked me, could I swim? He couldn't swim.
He couldn't swim.
Yeah. But when we left...
There's somebody else who didn't think before he moved decided he'd go on his boat.
When we left that next morning, we saw this inlet was so narrow, and there was rugged reef on both sides of it. If I'd been 20 feet off one side or the other, we would have just busted up on the reef.
Right. So you do, for all your events that seem to dump themselves on you,
yes,
you must have another guardian angel that's saying, okay,
well, you know,
we're going to get you through this.
You know, there's an old adage, you know, only survivors tell the story.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so, the stories on here in Living the Harbor Island, Trying to Make It, which is in adaptation of a Bahamian dialect.
Yeah, when you greet a Bahamian, you say, "How you doing?" Trying to make it, and I say that's beautiful.
Yes.
Trying to make it.
So why don't you give us a few highlights of the. Fun and frustrations involved with being a hotel keeper.
Oh,
or a B&B. Did you call yourself a B&B?
No, from three meals a day.
Right. Oh, three meals a day.
So
obviously you had to hire a cook somewhere down the line.
Oh, yeah, that was...
That must have been fun. I know about how... The volatility of cooks is legendary.
Well, we really lucked out on that because we had hired this maid, to be a maid, and we weren't open yet. I was still refurbishing these three rooms, and my wife said, the maid was standing nearby, and she said, you know, it'd be really nice to have a cheese souffle for supper. And she piped up. She said, I can make a cheese souffle, ma'am. You can? Out came the most perfect cheese souffle.
Whoa.
And that became our cook.
Uh-huh.
For the whole time, whole 18 years that we were there.
Mm. Yeah, I wanted to also, before we, you, on the third day that you were there for, you, is that when you proposed?
Or was the seventh day. The seventh day you proposed. I took my time, yes. I had to
You took your time all 7 days.
Yeah.
And this woman accepted you. Right.
Yes,
off?
A little slowly. She was not as impulsive as
a little
I.
slowly.
She thought about it for a while, another seven days or something.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Because yeah. I was thinking it might be perfect. If she was just as willing as you were to make this immediately.
No, she had to go back to England and get her things in order and her thinking in order and
right.
see that
okay.
she really wanted to
so
do
we had
this.
A little bit of sanity going on there.
Yes, yes, yes. Before all the insanity. That,
right. So, okay, we can get back to the cooks now. And
but the fun things of being an innkeeper are when a guest comes to you at 10 o'clock at night and all the staff has gone and says, there's a snake in my daughter's bed. I don't like snakes. We didn't have any venomous snakes, but I had to learn... The hard way, I caught the snake, and they're boas. They're black snakes, or mm-hmm. they call them chicken snakes or rat snakes. And it just wrapped itself around my arm right
uh-huh.
away. And I ran out with this thing in the dark and trying to figure out, how do I get this off my arm? Mm-hmm. I'm hanging onto the head so it can't bite me or anything.
Right.
And I finally unwound it and just flung it into the bush. But the Bahamians don't like snakes. They mm-hmm. are disciples of the devil.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And my...
The Bahamians aren't disciples of the devil, so the snakes
the
are.
Snakes are.
Right.
The snakes are,
just
yes.
in case anybody needs
And
to,
my head waiter, who was to go into the storage room to get the wine or spirits out, whatever we needed, and he said, boss, I can't go in there. There's a snake in there. So I had to go catch another snake.
Uh-huh.
And as I carried it out, all the staff were standing outside the kitchen. I said, don't look in his eyes, boss. He'll enchant you.
Wow.
And that's put a curse on you.
Right, right.
Because it's the disciple of the devil.
Right.
And I had this one fellow who was a born-again, who had been involved in drugs and that, so, and he was saved and all that. And he wanted to save everybody, you know. And especially he wanted to kill any snakes. Well, the snakes keep the rodents away.
Right, right.
And we're not overrun with snakes there by any means. So I said, no, I don't want the snakes killed. And he would say, boss, it's the devil making you say that. Devil's making you say
you
that.
You should say, no, he says, it's the rat demons that need to be kept down by the
yes.
evil snakes. You know?
So... I finally told him, Archie, if you kill any more snakes, I'm going to have to let you go.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me one day and said, oh, boss, there was a big snake in the dive shed. But I didn't kill him. I got the Haitian to kill him.
Well, that was something else that you got into was the diving.
What's that?
You ended up with a diving instructor.
Oh, yes. Well, I was the diving instructor for many, many years before. And then I finally hired a diving instructor because I was too busy to running the hotel to be out diving all the time.
Well, some of the other stories involved with the diving, as I was leafing through it and trying to refresh my memory because it's been a few months since I read the book, was Nigel. I came across.
Yes.
So there's other things going on with running an inn or a hotel on a Bahamian island.
Yes.
And that is how people take the island life as a way to explore their more erotic energies. And Nigel seemed to have been talented in other things besides
very much
underwater diving.
Well, he was not the first of many diving instructors that strange things happened. The strangest one was a honeymoon couple arrived, and she wanted to learn to dive, but he was just getting over bronchitis and couldn't dive. Mm-hmm. So she was beautiful. And my bartender told me that she was asking the bartender to try to get her husband interested in deep sea diving, because she was now having an affair with a diving instructor. She wanted him out of the way.
She wanted him off on a boat somewhere.
That's the honeymoon that was, huh? Yes. Or wasn't.
And didn't sometime later that Nigel, when he was leaving for his vacation or off time, went to Chicago, where she had rented an apartment for him?
Yes, yes. Nigel.
And he didn't sound, the way you described him, he sounded, you know, fairly average, prepossessing in his appearance.
I had been through this kind of thing with several diving instructors. Uh-huh. One couple, he was eating breakfast with them every morning, and after the 2 weeks were up, the husband said, well, I have to leave, but she's going to stay on. And she said, moved in with the diving instructor. But this happened time and time again.
So anybody out there who has a problem with meeting up with... Just a minute, let me finish. Anybody out there has a problem with meeting up with women, what they ought to do is learn how to be a diving instructor.
Well, I was a diving instructor. None of that happened.
That didn't happen to you.
Or become a ski instructor. It's also classically...
Really?
Happens with ski instructors all the time.
When I interviewed Nigel... we were over in England, and I put an ad in a paper there, and he was not an extrovert at all, and good-looking fellow, but,
You said he had a little paunch.
He had a little paunch, and he was, I shouldn't say balding, because I'm balding, but, and I thought, well, this is going to be safe. And my goodness, it was not safe at all.
But you have to remember context here. Mm-hmm. There's several contexts going on that'll lead to these sudden affairs. I mean, they seem like they're actually pretty common. One is you have the honeymoon, which is a time when usually a couple celebrates their union, but also it can be a time when they explore their union, mm-hmm. and for whatever reasons. People have second thoughts. You'd be surprised the flight that happens soon after a marriage, if not before, in terms of second thoughts. Yeah. And then people who have second thoughts, a lot of people, if they have a thought, they think they should do it. And there are more people who, if there's a thought, one should do it. And then so it's very common for these mm-hmm. things to happen. And the other thing then is you're on a vacation.
Yes.
Right, separated.
Yeah, separated
what
from
what happens
normal.
In Vegas stays in Vegas.
So the
in a very romantic atmosphere.
Right. Yeah, and so that's kind of isolated. Also, it means that all the strictures that would keep you from doing that, parents and friends. And,
right, nobody's there. And once you leave, it's over. Except when you let them come back and visit you when you rent an apartment for them. That's
well, that was, and he was a tightwad. He wouldn't spend a nickel, and when it came, we closed every year for 6 weeks for maintenance in the off season.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I said, Nigel, what are you going to do for your vacation? I didn't know whether he was going to stay there. He said, oh, well, she sent me airline tickets to come to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
she was obviously a woman of some means who could indulge her fancies.
But the...
So that's one of the aspects of being an innkeeper on a romantic island.
This is the harbor island dream, folks.
Right.
And even though Roy is no longer an innkeeper there, I'm sure if you want to indulge your libido, you can check out the Harbor Island.
Oh, it's a wonderful
Remora
place.
Remora is still there, right? The name of the...
Sadly, so it's still there.
Right.
The last people who bought it... were developers mm-hmm. whose idea was to tear everything down and build condos mm-hmm. on it. Well, the economy tanked in 2008,
right,
and that went out the window, but they let everything else go.
Mm-hmm.
It's still there, but it's
not functioning.
It gets terrible reviews. Just what a dump, you know.
nobody's working it really.
It's really
nobody
sad.
Manages it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're there. They're running it, but it's just it's.
Well, there's been
the
a lot of changes. There were a lot of changes before that. I mean, yeah. Somewhere in the book you mentioned the fact, maybe it was towards the end, where you were one of the first, if not the first, to put in air conditioning.
Yes.
For what would be summer season, which would be the off season, really.
Yeah, historically the island was just like a 4 or 5 month season. And everything closed after that because it got too hot.
Right.
And so I decided, well, I'd put in air conditioning and try to get summer business.
Right.
And everybody warned me, oh, that's, the electricity's going to just kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm going to try it. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And so now everybody has air conditioning.
Right,
And now it's a year-round, resort area. Yeah.
One
so
of
everybody
things.
Gets full employment. It's been good.
A lot of changes in that time, mm-hmm. even though, you know, the downturn in the universal economy.
Yeah. And it's become a real haven for celebrities,
mm-hmm.
the island has. And as a matter of fact, the...
you had a number of celebrities there yourself
you
were there.
Jimmy Buffett's song, Cheeseburger in Margaritaville,
mm-hmm.
that was inspired when he had a cheeseburger at a little place called Tingham Village on the island. And... that's an interesting word, Tingham. That's
You've got that in the list here.
Yeah.
It's what would be the equivalent of maybe thingamajig.
A thingamajig or something.
Yeah.
The Tingham. When you can't think of the word, you say, "Oh, the Tingham there. Go get the Tingham there."
Mm-hmm.
So that's Tingham Village.
There's another one in here. Can't catch myself. Usually spoken by a male on Monday morning after a weekend of drinking.
Yes.
Secures a few beers before coming to work.
Yes. Couldn't quite catch myself this morning.
Just me one is only me, no others.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Soon come. The mailboat will be here shortly.
Yeah.
let's see, what else do we have here? Comment by Bonefish Stanley Johnson, a fishing guide. I got no sense of humor for sharks.
Yeah.
But it's another, you know, things I'm getting used to being there, which is a different culture.
Oh, totally different. Yeah.
And you coming in as an outsider and seem to, from the reading of the book, have made very good set up or established very good relationships with people fairly quickly.
Yes, and this was really the great rewarding part of the whole experience was these people. They were so friendly. And I didn't find that in Nassau. That was one of the reasons why I thought, oh, the Bahamas. You know?
Right.
But it's totally different. And one reason the celebrities like it is because they're treated just like everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anybody ask them for an autograph, anything. And I think it's a big relief to them just to be able to walk on a beach and not have people stop them or anything. They all know they're there.
Right.
And Goldie Hawn came to stay with us, and she, I think it was the second day at breakfast, she just wore this little shift, and her hair looked like she'd done it with an egg beater or something, and she gave that laugh, and one of the guests came over and said, "Is that Goldie Hawn?" I said, "Yes, that's Goldie Hawn." But she was such a real down-to-earth person, and... she and my 3-year-old daughter just bonded, and she came down to the house to play with her, and she would be on her lap when she was eating meals, and found out they have the same birthday.
Ah, don't get that.
Yeah,
how about that? Yeah.
But then we had another guest check in, and he was an actor, and he said, "Now I want to be anonymous here, and I want to make sure that nothing is said. You know, I want to be."
Right.
Unrecognized her.
Right.
By the third day, and everybody, they did anyway. That was the natural way they did. By the, there wasn't television on the island or anything, so these were just people to them. By the third day, I walked past the bar, and he was in conversation with another guest. "You might remember me from 12 o'clock high. I starred in that."
interesting.
He couldn't stand it
he
anymore.
He couldn't stand it. He needed that somebody to know who he was.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, identity is such a fragile thing.
But you mentioned no TV, and there was also, tell us about the telephone.
Oh, my goodness. That was, you're totally isolated. We didn't have a
right.
telephone, and you had to go down a mile into the town to what they call telecommunications, and you had to place a call with a woman at the desk, and she had to somehow connect you with NASA. That took a long time. And when it finally came through, then you were directed to one of two little booths to make your telephone call. And but they always wanted your name so they could announce the name to whoever was going to answer the phone. That was part of the protocol.
Right.
Well, they could never pronounce my name.
Uh-huh.
They just couldn't. It was Smitch or Smit or something else. But so this one call that I made, the NASA operator wanted to know my name, and I said, Schmidt. And she said, how are you pronouncing that? And I said, Schmidt. She said, how are you pronouncing that? And I was getting a little irritated with right. this. What she really wanted to know was how you spell it.
Okay.
And so I would spell it out, and they'd say, oh, Smitch. But then I...
It's spelled, folks, S-C-H-M-I-D-T.
Yes, yes.
By the way, Roy, do you have a website?
Yes, I do. Books? The website. Thank you for asking. The website is Harbor Island Dream.
Uh-huh.
And the harbor is the English spelling, H-A-R-B-O-U-R, but I've also got it under just O-R.
Right.
So you can get through
so you
to
can
it.
Find it. Right.
To it either way.
So I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Carolina Bookbeat, and we're talking this morning with Roy Schmidt. Not Smitch. Roy Schmidt.
Smittish. That was another one. Smittish.
Author of basically a memoir, Living the Harbor Island Dream, story of falling in love with an island and just within 3 days buying 10 acres with a house and deciding to go into business as an innkeeper. With no prior experience in this, and it's a very engaging book full of adventure, and obviously describes you as a person who will act, you know, who will have an idea and will do it.
I became that, yes.
Yes, and fortunately still here to tell the tale.
Yeah.
From this... because you eventually was the end of the dream, or the dream reached its capability of the degree of which you could fulfill it.
It became a bad dream.
Yeah, and I was thinking also that, you know, success comes from people who are not afraid to fail.
Yeah.
So you had success.
Yes.
And then it was followed by a decompression or something.
Yeah, yes. Just a series of events. That,
right. That ended this
yeah.
particular dream
mm-hmm.
and brought you back to this country, or
mm-hmm.
you know, the mainland.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you did another one, you know, oddly consecutive series of jobs where you just did anything.
Yes, I opened a restaurant in Greensboro.
Yes, and that. With no, well, you had experience.
Oh, yes,
with,
by then
you had
yeah.
some experience
yeah.
with
yeah.
providing
well,
food.
Actually, well, being a innkeeper, you must definitely have had experiences doing lots of things, lots of practical things just from having done that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
You know, it's a good
training.
It's a good resume.
You know, especially jumping into it without any training.
So what kind of food were you serving up in Greensboro?
American. It was called Nathaniel's Tavern, and it was continental American.
Continental and, American.
Just basic general.
Basic,
what you
yeah.
might
yeah,
find.
Yeah, basic light French cooking, as they call
yeah,
it. Yeah,
that had a 9-month life.
Uh-huh.
Because of hepatitis.
Yes.
You may have heard.
I read that part in there too.
Yeah.
That'll put a into anybody's restaurant.
Yeah. So between hurricanes when sailing and hepatitis with a restaurant, and then you for a while you were assisting with a
the glider.
The glider.
Yeah.
Business where you were towing.
Yeah.
People.
I was managing this little glider business for this fellow in Whitsitt. I had always wanted to. I'm a commercial pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I have my commercial pilot's license. Mm-hmm. I never had it as a job, but I always wanted to get a glider rating. So I had gone there and gotten the instruction.
See, something else you always wanted to do it, so you went and did it.
And did that, and then the fellow said, "Well, I got this other thing I need to do. Would you like to take over and run this place for me?" And I started flying the tow plane to tow the pilots up. It was an old crop duster airplane, and it's a single seater, so you can't get checked out. You just do it.
Right.
They tell you what it's all about.
Yes.
Then you get in and do it.
Well, you had a commercial license to start with, so at least you had an idea of what a plane did. And you one time actually towed one of your sons.
My son, when he was took glider instruction, and you can legally solo a glider when you're 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he was 14, we did that, and I was the tow pilot, and that was quite a symbolic experience because I towed him up to 3,000 feet, and then he releases from the tow line on his end, and then the protocol is so that tow line can't tangle in the glider that you immediately. The tow pilot turns to the left and dives to get away. I didn't want to get away. It's my little boy up there. I kind of choked up. I want to stay there with him. And he's a character. We had radios. And I said, "You doing all right? You doing all right?" With all kinds of apprehension. Yeah, thanks for the lift, Dad.
Well, you know,
now get out of the way.
let's talk a little bit about gliding, I assume that where you glide is some place where there's a number of updrafts, so you can sort of circle around and go up.
Thermal updrafts.
Yeah, you know, so because I remember, I guess it was in Napa Valley, there was a lot of thermal updrafts from there, you know, but it was also a valley, you know, which gives that kind of lift. So you'd see these gliders. Go around and around and around.
Because they're in a thermal.
Yeah,
you see the red-tailed hawks, and a lot of times when we're up in a glider, there's a hawk or two circling with you.
Yeah.
About 10 feet off your wingtip.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so, and that, of course, means that you can stay up for quite a while. Which is, I guess, the fun of it in a lot of ways.
That's it. That's the challenge. You go from thermal to thermal. And
yeah. So where near where was that Wittburgs or
where were you doing the glider?
Whitsitt, right near Gibsonville.
Gibsonville, and there's some good thermals around there, huh?
Yeah, the AT&T parking lot was excellent.
How interesting.
That's we always headed for
yes.
that.
Yeah, right.
The heat coming off
the heat off the tarmac. Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well. All of that I'd like to get to, because then you went into something else. And the something else is writing this book. Is this the first book you've written?
It's the first book I've written. I did write a short little essay, which the only thing I've ever had published was in the Urban Hiker, a local.
Oh, I remember that when that used to be around.
Yeah, I was just inspired by something I saw, and I decided to write it. So, no, this is all... It was the encouragement of my children. Dad, you've got to write some of these stories down. Mm-hmm. You've got to write some of these stories down. So I just, I'll write some of these stories down. But then as I got in it, and it's evolved, and I took several writing courses.
Okay. Where did you take the
locally
courses?
At Ollie, Osher Life and Living Institute. You know, the Ollie courses that... it's sponsored by, they're national. And
okay.
It's for seniors mainly. Okay. And they had a course in memoir writing and then another course in creative writing.
Okay. Because I'm thinking, you know, I know that Duke has learning and retirement type things.
That's it.
That's
it. Ollie.
That's Ollie. Okay.
That is Ollie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what helped so much is I got so much encouragement from the classmates because all my assignments that I turned in were
related to these
stories.
Yeah.
And they said, we want to hear more.
Right.
So, okay, I'll do more.
And you had pictures. You had taken photographs while you were down
there.
Oh,
yes.
Beautiful photographs in here.
Yes.
Just looking at wedding photographs and some children. And here you've got, I guess it's two of your children in a mocked up.
Oh, that was a flight simulator that I built for my son.
Right. And how old are they there? About six and seven?
He's probably six. And she's probably eight. Yeah.
Right. But they're great photographs, good photographs on the cover, color photographs. And so you had that to add to the picture.
Yes.
But you
yes.
weren't thinking of writing a book when you took the photographs.
No. Just
of course not.
Part of the history of it.
So that's a whole other challenge. I mean, to actually, you took the writing course because it was, you know, an interesting thing to do to get down your story down. But then to actually make it into a book and get it published. Now, is this self-published?
It's self-published.
Okay.
Without a name,
right.
Your manuscript won't be read. So I knew that wasn't the way to go.
So beyond the self-publishing is also the self-promotion.
Yes.
In order to get the book sold. And you said earlier it does very well on the island.
Yes, it's selling very well on the island. And I've got the website. It's on Amazon, and it's strange. I'll get an order from London, and unfortunately, I put free shipping.
Oh dear!
I should have said within the continental limits.
Yes.
Yeah. You might want to change that.
It costs $18 to send the book to.
Yeah, right. You know,
to London.
Your $6 book is you don't cost $18 to ship. I've run into that a couple.
But
of times.
But what's been so rewarding is people that I haven't heard from in. You know, years and years and years, will write to me that they came across the book.
So you just don't know. Like I was saying earlier, when I meet people that say they've actually heard the radio show, it's like, whoa.
Yes, right.
And so again, it's Living the Harbor Island Dream, and Harbor is spelled H-A-R-B-O-U-R, and Roy's website is harborislanddream.com. Your website.
The website, yes.
Yes.
HarborIslandDream.com, yes.
And you can actually get to that either by spelling it H-A-R-B-O-U-R or H-A-R-B-O-R.
It's also on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's in a Kindle version as well.
Okay.
And the price on Amazon looks less, but when they add $4 freight,
right.
It comes out the same.
Well, the trick with Amazon is to save up, make a wish list until you get over $25 and they have free shipping.
That's right. But on my website, I have a buy now button to get a signed copy.
Aha.
And they charge it on a credit card through PayPal. PayPal confirms it to me, and I send them the book.
Right.
The book, sign it, send it to them, inscribe it to them.
Uh-huh.
And it's free shipping, folks.
Free shipping.
So how do you get, yes. How, what do you think about this whole publishing business, of going through this process? I mean, the amount of time it comes, is it something you like? Is it something where it makes you think you might want to write another book?
I don't think I want to write another book. I'm going on 81 now.
It's no excuse.
But you know, the funny thing is that, when I finally finished it and got it done, I wished I could tell Herman Woke that his book inspired me to do this. And I picked up a Costco newsletter, and here in the book section, Herman Woke's new novel, 97, he has just written a new novel.
Whoa.
Called The Lawgivers. It's hilarious.
You know, well, you know, you could jot down a note and send it to his publisher.
I did, and I thought I'd never hear, and I got the nicest letter back from him about 3 months later.
How very great!
He said, "So few people will take the time or trouble to show appreciation for my writing works."
Yeah, that's true.
Wow!
And he wished me luck. So
yeah, that's something you could frame, pass on to your kids, and they can take it to Antiques Roadshow someday.
That's right. Well,
yeah.
So now what you're doing, if you're not writing, but you are consulting with energy efficiency?
Energy, I went back into the heating business and then expanded. People wanted some highly energy efficient system for heating and air conditioning. I said, well, how are you going to build your house? And the whole idea for energy efficiency is build the walls and the roof the best way you can, and then your heating system can be much smaller and much more efficient.
Well, it really interests me
so it's basically making airtight houses so that you can control the influx and outflux.
Yep.
Yeah.
Aren't there pluses and minuses with making the house too
airtight?
You
have to have positive ventilation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I became a distributor for a manufacturer that makes these wall and roof panels.
And what is positive ventilation?
Oh, you bring in outside air.
No, you have to bring in. In other words, it has to suck in from the outside.
Yeah.
And then otherwise, what happens is you build up all this carbon monoxide or eventually.
Humidity is going to go up, which is great in the winter, but from cooking and all bathing and everything, you create a lot of humidity. So
the panels that you, what kind of panels, the building panels? Because I'm thinking of the, what is it, the aerated concrete?
Oh, yes. Okay. No, it's not that, and it's not the concrete forms. It's a panel that's steel studs. It's your structural framing.
Okay.
But embedded with expanded polystyrene, which is the coffee cup.
Okay.
So you got a 5.5-inch thick wall that's expanded polystyrene, and it's double the insulating value of any other, well, except for the aerated block and the, but it's more cost effective too.
Yeah, and if your house happens to catch on fire, folks, don't stay in there, because that stuff when it goes on fire is toxic.
No.
No?
Not
no?
this. No.
Not the, oh, that, not the version.
No CFCs.
In the houses.
Or it's
okay.
No toxins.
All right. Well, that's this is good to know. So stick around while your house is on fire.
Well, I just finished building a 400-square-foot cabin down in Moncure.
I wish I'd known you then.
Yes. And, you know, did my own contracting, which I had never done anything like this before.
You.
But I just moved into it like 2 months ago.
Wonderful.
It's a little smaller than the studio, if you can imagine.
Yeah, it's 400 square feet, 20 by 20.
That's the trend these days.
Yes,
yes, definitely.
It's you know, designed so it could be added on to if the sky ever starts dumping money on me. So. You serve as a consultant now, as representative, or?
I'm a representative. I sell this panel system.
Okay.
But I consult on heating systems and heating and air conditioning systems.
So if people contact you about your book, and they could also put in there a little thing saying, by the way.
It has opened a lot.
We don't do commercials on community radio.
It has opened a lot of doors for me in many ways. Friendships that have developed all, and I'm amazed at Twin Lakes, the community, the number of people that are familiar with Harbor Island, have been there, have sailed there.
And Twin Lakes is where you're is a retirement community now that you're living
in Burlington.
In Burlington.
Yeah.
Well, this is, you know, there's no telling what you might be doing next. I mean, you say you're 81, but I don't think that's going to stop you. I mean, Herman Wolk is still publishing at 97.
Mm-hmm.
You might just take up training cadaver dogs. And I say that because we had an author on recently who actually this is Kat Warren, who wrote a book called What the Dog Knows.
Yeah.
And how she, in who had always trained her German Shepherd and lost one, or the one she had for years got older, and whatever, she got a new German Shepherd who was hyper.
Yeah.
And through this whole experience of trying to obedience train, one of the trainers that she was trying to work with, this crazy dog was driving her nuts, was that he would be a good cadaver dog, and to train him along that, to give him something to do. It was a dog that needed something to do.
Oh, I see.
And
yeah,
she got into this whole other adventure in life. So, you know, that just popped into my head as to what you might do next.
Well, actually, well, Roy.
Not skydiving.
Not skydiving.
Well, you know, no, Roy, actually, I'm sure that you should keep jot down some notes as you come across of various anecdotes around this heating and air conditioning work you're doing. I'm sure there's a lot of gaffes in there that could create a lot of laughs.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, it's also the fact that there is a move towards minimalization of people building really small.
Right.
I don't want to have anything that I more than what I want to clean, and I'm not really crazy about house cleaning. So I'm very happy to have something small, although I might want another room or two, but that's it.
Well, we went very happily from 3,000 square feet to 1,600 square mm-hmm. feet, and we love it.
Right, right.
And I have no maintenance worries.
Mm-hmm. So that's always a pleasure. Well, what advice would you give to some, as a person who has lived his life with accepting adventure, following a dream like living the Harbor Island dream without any regrets, because the end of the book says it's been a very good life.
Yeah.
What advice might you give to someone else who's approaching decisions in their lives?
As I got near the end of the book, I realized that there's another aspect to this other than just the memoir and this mm-hmm. happened and that happened, because of the experience of talking to other people who wish they could do the same thing. And so part of it is I wrote it in the hope that some reader out there might be inspired to cut the ties to an unrewarding life and mm-hmm. make the leap to achieve a dream of their own. And I hope that happens.
Yeah, that's great. It's one thing I remember saying in because I've been making notes as I went through this process. I've got a blog that I started on what is happening and stepping off the rock of certainty into the open air of possibility.
Yes.
And if your certainty is not something you're happy with,
right,
you know, take the leap.
Yes.
Remember, folks, life is not what you plan.
Roy, I want to thank you very much. It's been a pleasure meeting you this morning and talking with you about the book, and you know, I hope we can all stay in touch.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and I've enjoyed being able to chat with you folks about this.
Okay.
It's always fun.
We're going
to thank you, Roy. Yeah, we'll take a break now and then we'll come back. I'm going to be reading the introductory epistle by George Bernard Shaw to Man and Superman.
And this is as we finish up the first hour of Carolina Bookbeat and switch into cultural classics with Paul Nodge. And we'll have a little musical interlude. And just a reminder, this is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. So listen up. Come back next week. Let me see what will happen next week. Aha! Samuel Montgomery Blinn is coming back next week. We have our Carolina Book Beat focus on North Carolina speculative fiction.